Well, we're very happy right now to have with us Len Pascarelli, longtime NFL journalist, one of the very best in the country, senior writer for the Sports Exchange. You can see his great work on FoxSports.com or CBSSports.com. Len, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Vic. We've both been doing this longer than either of us want to admit or remember.
That's a good point. Some days, that's how I feel. But it is, it's still something that I know it's a passion, and that's something I've seen in you, my friend, for many, many years.
We still both enjoy it, yes. So, you know, hey, what the heck.
Yeah, exactly. And a lot to talk about, Lenny, this offseason. And it's funny how football's popularity, and you compare it with other sports, but on a day when you can have an announcement of so-called new uniforms, and really it's just a new manufacturer, Nike, not really making any changes for the vast majority of teams in the league, and then having the announcement of preseason schedules without even the exact dates. And those become like headline topics in sports.
Isn't it amazing, Vic? I mean, look, you know, you and me have known this for years, as have a lot of people, that the NFL is the preeminent sport of probably this or any other time, certainly professional sport at least. But you know, I sat here, Vic, thinking, you know, isn't this crazy? Like, they announce these changes in uniforms, which are cosmetic at most for most teams, and they announce the preseason schedule, and I'm thinking, you know, sit around and think, you know, when baseball announces the exhibition schedule, does it get the kind of headlines that the preseason schedule got in the NFL?
Yeah.
But I think, Vic, it's part of why we both, you know, love what we do and part of this game and part of what's made it so popular. But it is a little bit insane. I mean, we used to think like the off-season stuff would be free agency and the draft, and that would carry us through the off-season. Now we got uniform changes and the preseason schedule coming out, and there's this whole mania awaiting us, Vic. At some point, probably this month, about the regular season schedule, which will be an entire day of stories too.
Oh yeah, days. Yeah, you're absolutely right about that. And people, like, not just those of us in the business, but I mean, people, the fans. You plan your life around this stuff, and that's not an overstatement. Another big story, Len, going on is the bounty situation involving the Saints. The league hearing that appeal from Sean Payton and the others who have been punished by the league. But I wonder now that the latest development regarding Greg Williams, and it raises the question, who the guy who's been suspended indefinitely, of course, now the defensive coordinator inactive for the St. Louis Rams, whether or not he ever coaches again, because now there's some really damning information coming out regarding a documentary that has some quotes attributed to him that don't help his case at all.
No, absolutely. And damning is the right word. You picked the precise word as usual there, my friend. I mean, it is really bad stuff. It gets, you know, uglier, Vic, by the day, if that's possible. And if I'm Sean Payton or Mickey Loomis or I guess Joe Vitt has appealed his suspension as well, you know, walking into that meeting today with Roger Goodell to appeal those suspensions, you can't feel very good, Vic, about your chances. And I mean, the question you raised about Greg Williams is a terrific one, because I really wonder, and I've known Greg, Vic, as you have, probably most of his career, if not maybe all of his career in the NFL, and you wonder if he's ever going to coach in the NFL again, if this has besmirched him, for lack of a better term, so much that he kind of becomes an untouchable. And you know, if people haven't seen, I haven't seen it yet, but certainly we'll look at it, you know, at some point tonight probably. If you haven't seen the documentary, and I've seen transcripts from it, it is really damning stuff. And just to elucidate, you know, your listeners, it's from before the postseason game against the 49ers.
Right.
And you know, it's probably, Vic, you know, the kind of language that wouldn't curl your hair or mine. You know, we've heard it from coaches before, but when you take it in context of hurting players and saying you want to lay one on the chin of Alex Smith and go out and turn Frank Gore's head sideways, you know, make him a sideways runner, and let's take out that guy's ACL, you know, let's find out how tough he is. I mean, it really becomes, you know, your word is the best word, Vic. It's very damning stuff, and in this situation, just, you know, day by day, just keeps getting uglier.
Yeah, and it points to the specifics of what this case is all about, the intent to injure versus just being competitive and playing good defense, because nobody is against that, and nobody certainly is against a coach encouraging players to play hard, play tough, hit hard. All those things are legit, and that's as old as football. But this does bring into focus the specific, like you said, ACL and other types of injuries that are the ugly side of this game, frankly. And I think that's where something like this not only potentially hurts Williams for the long haul, possibly his entire career, but it certainly isn't going to do anything for Sean Payton or Mickey Loomis or Joe Vitt.
No.
Or the Saints organization that's given up a couple of draft picks as a result of this as well, a couple of high choices. So, yeah, I think this just has a chance to reaffirm, possibly to those, I don't know if we'll ever convince Saints fans, Lenny, that this is the right thing, you know, for that the commissioner's doing, but I think for those who have had any doubts, this is going to help eliminate those doubts.
No, and look, again, for guys that have been doing this 30 some years, you know, like you and me have, you know, we're not virgins in this. We've heard this kind of language, Vic, before, but to hear it in this kind of context, it, you know, really drives home the point that you know, Commissioner Goodell probably did the right thing. Doesn't make the job of the people you mentioned or the Saints any easier. Won't, you know, as you indicated, probably change the mind of many people in New Orleans. But it is pretty hair-curling stuff, even for people who have been around the game for a while. I mean, you hear this kind of talk, you hear this kind of graphic language, but to basically suggest you got to take guys out. And I think, Vic, you know, not to linger on this point, but think about, Vic, the ramifications of this beyond the suspensions and things like that. If you're a player who was, you know, injured in some way by the Saints, you might have some type of legal action there, a civil lawsuit or something like that. And to me, Vic, that's probably the other shoe that might fall, and the one that, look, the NFL is embarrassed by this. Commissioner Goodell is embarrassed that this went on in his league. But to have legal ramifications here, Vic, is probably, one would think, an even bigger fear for the league.
Len Pasquarelli joining us, veteran NFL journalist. He's a senior writer for the Sports Exchange. You see his great work on foxsports.com, cbssports.com. Len, as we talk about the draft and a lot of different topics here, one of the more interesting ones of the week was the revelation of Morris Claiborne's Wonderlic score, that it was reported to be a 4, obviously a very low score on that test. But I think it's the lingering story seems to be A, about the test itself, and maybe B, about the, again, violation of confidentiality, which seems to happen every year, that an embarrassingly low score gets out there somehow.
Yeah, and I think, Vic, there was a directive sent out by Commissioner Goodell about keeping, you know, draft-type stuff confidential. I mean, you think, Vic, and you can, you know, talk to the Browns people about how much money they spend, you know, compiling information on the draft. It's hundreds of thousands, maybe $1 million. I don't know. I mean, I haven't done this in a while where I've talked to teams, certainly in the hundreds of thousands of dollars that they spend accumulating information. And the Wonderlic test, right or wrong, is part of that. And for some of this stuff to leak out, and it does every year, particularly as you kind of pointed out, when scores are really, really low, like that of Morris Claiborne, I mean, should this stuff even be getting out? But it raises the bigger question of, you know, does this taint Morris Claiborne or make you look at him in a different way? Now, you know, in the day and a half or so that this has been public, the people I've talked to say no. The people at LSU, Vic, claim that, you know, he's more a visual learner than he is a guy that you know, is going to read a report and learn something from that. He learned by doing it and watching it. But I don't know how much it's going to hurt him. But it really raises the question of the credibility of the Wonderlic, how much the Wonderlic means. I know I saw a quote from Jimmy Johnson that he claimed 90% of his draft mistakes were taking guys, not with low Wonderlics, but guys who had, you know, like a learning problem. It really raises the question of learning disability. I talked to an old buddy, Ken Herrock, who you know is a longtime NFL personnel executive, and he has a company now, ProPrep, that kind of prepares players for the combine and for the interviews. And I think I wrote this a couple weeks ago. There were probably more guys, Vic, this year with learning disabilities, ADH, dyslexia, things like that, than we've had in the past. And it's just the reality of our society
right. That
the league is going to have to start dealing with this, Vic.
Right. And again, yeah, find the best way to reach these players and teach them. And it's all about, because on athletic skill, so many guys are even in that department. The separation becomes that ability to learn and intelligence.
You know what, Vic? I've always thought, you know, and you can look at the Patriots. You know, they are a prime example. Year in and year out, Vic, the Patriots probably have more college graduates on their roster than anybody else. And as a kind of an addendum to that, they probably, and I think I actually studied this last year, they probably have more college team captains, football captains on their roster than anybody else. And I've always kind of called it, for lack of a better term, certainly not being immodest here, the Pasquarelli theory, Vic, that smarts and character and knowledge and things like that are going to win you two more games a year than you would normally win. And
that's
just an arbitrary figure,
Vic.
But if I throw that kind of out there, and I think it all impacts into this.
You're going to make the right in the moment of the crunch time, the pressure
moment. Right, exactly.
Moment, yeah. You're going to make the right decision.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So
that's
key. Len, another draft-related item, and I know this is something you've written about and talked about, and maybe it's been under the radar, but I don't know that it should be at all. The presumption that the Minnesota Vikings would be taking Matt Khalil, the tackle from USC, with that third pick, is not necessarily a foregone conclusion. And in your investigating this, and I know you're close to a lot of people with the Vikings, that perhaps they could be looking at a Morris Claiborne there instead, which would leave an interesting option for the Browns at number four, a Browns team that absolutely on the lookout for a tackle, maybe Khalil falling to them, and then see what the Browns do with it.
Yeah, well, it definitely impacts the Browns, as you know. And I think I wrote this maybe like 2 weeks or so ago, Vic, and had what I thought was pretty justifiable and trusted knowledge. Not that the Vikings would take somebody other than Khalil, but that they were seriously considering at that point in time Morris Claiborne. And from talking to people, Vic, in the last day and a half or so, I'm not sure that has changed because of the Wunderlich score that we've alluded to. But they need cornerbacks as probably as much as they need tackles. And the theory up there has been that they can draft Matt Khalil and probably move Charles Johnson, who's been playing out of position at left tackle, into left guard to take Hutchinson's place. But I don't think it's a slam dunk, Vic. I really don't. And that could leave, you know, if they took a Claiborne or somebody else, that could leave a fairly interesting, and it's going to be an interesting decision there for in Cleveland anyway for the team you cover, Vic. That could leave a really, really interesting decision, because I think most people think that Matt Khalil is probably the third best player in this draft and maybe the safest pick, quite frankly. So, you know, they're going to have some interesting options there in Cleveland.
Yeah, no, that'll be it will be so fascinating, because they can go so many different ways with that pick. Len, great stuff as always. We truly enjoy it, and thank you, and I know we'll be visiting again soon, my friend.
Always a pleasure, my friend. Get ready for that draft. I know you will, and we'll talk again soon.
He is Len Pasquarelli, senior writer for the Sports Exchange. Again, check out his stuff on foxsports.com, on cbssports.com. His Friday tip sheet, a must-read for all NFL fans. We've got much more coming up on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford, and brought to you by Madden NFL 12. EA Sports, it's in the game.